Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. Near the end of his conclusion to part three of his Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics, Kant is going to come back to the exploration of boundaries or bounds, or if you like, limits, although we want to be a little bit careful in using that term. The German is Grenzen, right, which we in some context will translate as limits, but here we're usually translating as boundaries or bounds. And he is going to say at the beginning of this note, this conclusion, I made use of the metaphor, a Sinnbild, literally a thing that you could sensuously picture or grasp, of a boundary, Grenze, to establish limits, Schranken, of reason in regard to its suitable use. Now, when he did that, there's really two things that we want to point out. So one of these is that he actually did make a distinction between boundaries and limits, right? So this is important. He says, bounds in extended things always presuppose a space existing outside a definite place and enclosing it. Limits, Grenzen, do not require this, but are mere negations which affect a quantity insofar as it is not absolutely complete. And reason has both limits and bounds or boundaries, right? So that's an important thing to keep in mind. And then he uses a spatial metaphor. We almost can't avoid spatial metaphors with respect to this. And he's going to talk about an empty space, right? The contrast between the occupied space, which we can have knowledge of, versus the void or leeren, right? So that's also quite important. Now, coming back to section 59, he continues and he says, the world of sense contains merely appearances, Erscheinungen, which are not things in themselves, but the understanding must assume these latter ones, that is, noumena, because it knows the objects of experience to be mere appearances. So he's going to then say, in our reason, both are comprised together. So what are both comprised together? Well, the noumena, the things in themselves, which we can't know, but we also can't avoid thinking about, and all of the appearances which are connected in a cohesive, systematic, rule-bound world that we experience. So reason is grasping both of these, and then he says, and the question, die Frage, is what? How does reason set boundaries to the understanding as regards to both fields? The field of experience and sense, the other field of the unknowable noumena. How does reason do this? And now notice what he's saying here. Reason isn't just finding limits. How does reason itself actively impose limits? Begrenzen is the verb that Kant is using there to place limits. And it is placing limits both for the understanding and for itself. So we're confronted with some interesting insights here by Kant. So he's going to start out not by saying how reason actually imposes these limits itself, but what reason realizes by looking at other things. So experience, Erfahrung, which contains all that belongs to the sensible world, does not bound itself, right? Begrenzt sich nicht selbst. So it doesn't manage to restrict, to impose limits upon itself. It can impose limits in the sense of Schranken, right? But it can't impose boundaries on itself. Why not? Well, because it proceeds in every case from the condition to some other equally conditioned thing, so its boundary must lie quite without it. Okay, so what is that boundary then? Well, it's in these pure beings of the understanding, the field of them. But this field, he says, as far as the determination of the nature of those beings is concerned, so figuring out exactly what they are, having knowledge about them, we don't have that. So the pure beings of the understanding, he says, is an empty space, a leere Raum, for us. And if dogmatically determined concepts are being considered, we cannot pass beyond the field of possible experience. So if we're too restrictive, too demanding in what we want out of these things in themselves, well, we can't get to them at all. We can't have knowledge of them. So Kant is going to go on further. And now we're moving from the negative to the positive. He says that a boundary is itself something positive. How is a boundary positive? It's restrictive, isn't it? It's saying you can't go any further. It's negating. Well, it's positive in the sense that it's setting something in place, in space, we might say, mental space. So he tells us that the boundary is positive because it belongs to two different things, two different sets of things. What lies within it, okay, so great. The boundary contains some things, but it also belongs to what is without, what is past the boundary, right? So he tells us it is still an active, positive cognition. Now, this is an important term here, Erkenntnis. Erkenntnis can be translated as cognition. It can also be translated as knowledge. So we can't actually have knowledge of what the things in themselves are, the noumena, but we can have knowledge, Erkenntnis, of this boundary. So that's an important advance, and I don't want you to not see that. It's not just something we can think, it's something we can actually know. So how is that possible? He says that it's an active positive cognition which reason only acquires by, now we could say enlarging or by extending would also be a good translation, erweitert. A reason widens itself, extends itself to this boundary without attempting to pass it. Why? Now, the translation can be a little bit misleading. It finds itself in the presence of an empty space. Now, that sounds a little bit oxymoronic, doesn't it? Presence, filling, empty space. So it just says it actually finds itself, finds empty space before it, and then it thinks within that empty space something. It doesn't know the something that it's thinking, but it says it can think the forms, the formen of things, dingen, but not the things themselves. So what are these forms? Well, they're not fully determined, right? But that doesn't mean that we can't think whatever's past that boundary, whatever's moving from the phenomenal to the noumenal. We just can't fully comprehend it. We can't apply the same sort of concepts that we have over in the realm of experience to the things in themselves, which are beyond this boundary. So he goes on and he says that the setting of a boundary to the field of experience by something which is otherwise unknown to reason is still a cognition which belongs to it, belongs to reason, even at this point, and by which it is neither confined within the sensible, reason is not confined just in the sensible, nor strays beyond the sensible, but limits itself. Reason imposes its own limits on itself as befits the knowledge of a boundary. And what does it do? Limits itself to the relation between what lies beyond it and what is contained within it. So we really could say we have several different moving parts here. We have what is within, what is without, experience, the noumenal, things in themselves, the boundary, and then we have reason. Reason has extended itself up to this point, thinks the things that are on the other side of that boundary, thinks the boundary itself, and thinks the relation between what is on each side of the boundary. Now, Kant actually provides us here with an example that we can use, which he's already developed a bit earlier in this, talking about natural theology. What is natural theology? Trying to determine something about what it is that we call God, the divine, using just the resources of reason and potentially experience, not revelation. So he says natural theology is such a concept at the boundary of human reason, being constrained to look beyond this boundary to the idea. Notice that he doesn't say the reality. Notice that he doesn't say the determination. The idea of a supreme being, and for practical purposes, to that of an intelligible world also, not in order to determine anything relatively to this mere being of the understanding, which lies beyond the world of sense, but to guide the use of reason within the world of sense according to principles of the greatest possible unity. So reason makes use of the reference of the world of sense to an independent reason. So it looks at the world of sense, goes beyond the boundary. That's a reference here. As the cause of all the world's connections, reason does not merely invent a being, but as beyond the sensible world, there must be something that can be thought only by the pure understanding, reason determines this something in this particular way, something that's on the other side of the boundary, though only, of course, according to analogy, which he's discussed earlier in this section, where he was distinguishing between deism and theism and the use of analogy in both of these. So what we have here is reason recognizing and imposing this boundary between the world of experience, the phenomenal, and the ideas of the understanding, ideas of reason, which are noumenal ultimately, and there's this important boundary, and reason is what can confine itself to these and look at the relation between these two fields. So this is a fuller development of the boundaries of reason. Now it's no longer something reason bumps into. It's something that reason recognizes and can impose upon itself. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.